Hey, what's up, everyone? Thanks for checking out this episode of the Airgun Podcast. I'm really excited for you guys to hear what Joe has to say. He is one of the coolest dudes I've ever talked to. So nice, so just down to earth, awesome guy. I'm really looking forward to doing more stuff with him. But today what we dive into is kind of more unconventional than we normally do. It's a different approach than the other episodes that we've covered on the podcast. And we kind of talk about starting a YouTube channel and what that looks like and kind of how Joe actually fell backwards into it and never saw himself doing this, but here he is with a very successful YouTube channel. And even though he got into it originally with air guns, the thing that he saw a gap in the market for was the optics reviews, and that's what he started doing. So I know I personally have struggled with wanting to create a YouTube channel and put out these awesome videos that we see our favorite YouTubers doing, and airgun specifically, and then just realizing, man, I don't know if I have that talent. I don't know if I have the equipment. Like, you can make all kinds of excuses, but the reality is the top guys are putting in the hours. They have the experience, they have the gear, and they are putting in work to bring awesome production, and kind of just realizing maybe I don't have everything it takes to do that right now. So where is somewhere I can step in? So Joe talks about that, and it's super cool. Great episode. And then of course we talk air guns and kind of the practical side of things and, safety tips and things like that. So if you're not following along, check out Cyclops videos, and you'll find them on Instagram, YouTube. The dude's a legend. So make sure you're following along, especially if you want really good optics reviews.
Well, Joe, welcome to the Airgun Podcast, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Joe, why don't you just do a little bit of intro of who you are? I know people probably know you better by your YouTube channel name and things like that. Why don't you just give us a little bit of background, and then we'll get into a couple fun facts about you.
Okay. Well, my YouTube channel is Cyclops Videos, and I do some air gun stuff. And actually, I have three air gun reviews I'm going to be doing over the next couple of months. An Impact, and then a Diana rifle from the 1970s, and a Fine Work Bow rifle from the 1980s. I really enjoy the classic air guns. But somewhere along the line, I actually started my channel to help guys rebuild classic air gun rifles. And I started end up doing optics reviews, and just kind of fell ass backwards into it. I never really set out to do scopes or anything like that. I just started doing them and started enjoying it. It just kind of grew from there. And it took off for a weird reason. There was a guy that we ended up becoming buddies, Kenny Cormody. He had a channel called My Airgun Reviews. And Kenny passed away a little over a year ago, but he had seen one of my videos and he really hated it. I mean, hated it. and he put out a video talking about I was so full of shit and I didn't know what I was talking about and this guy's an ass and all that stuff. What it did, people saw it and they went to my channel thinking, oh man, who is this jerk that he's talking about, that got him so upset? And anyway, it drove a lot of traffic to my channel and made it kind of take off. And what it takes a long time to get traction on YouTube, and once it kind of started growing, I just started building an audience. And a lot of guys don't know this, but Kenny and I actually became friends later before he passed away. And we just had the biggest laugh out of that. And I told him several times, if we really wanted to grow our channels, we should have a online spat, and start calling each other names in our videos and stuff. And, everybody loves drama, but the guy was really cool, man. He was a great guy. And, I really miss him. He was just a lot of fun. But yeah, just like I say, just kind of fell backwards into it.
Well, that's one way to do it, man. You can't argue with the results, right?
Yeah, it's weird. This time last year, like 17,000 subscribers. Now I've got like 42. And why guys keep tuning in, I have no freaking idea, but they do. And I like it and I enjoy it. And I've been... it's been a real blessing, because when I started doing it, the guys that were overseas that are really into the classic air rifles like I am, in Europe, they're a real big deal because they're limited to 12 foot-pounds in a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. So when I started redoing them, I would they would contact me by email because I was posting some of my results and stuff on some of the airgun forums. And they would contact me by email, and I would email them back. Then they would email me. And something that would be a five-minute conversation would take a week, you know, to relay the information. And then a buddy of mine, Brian, that now owns Ed Gun West, at the time he didn't. We just knew each other from the forums and talking on the phone. And he advised me, he told me, man, just start a YouTube channel. And I was like, no, man, I'm not interested in that. You know, I just can't imagine anything more self-indulgent. You know, I just, it just wasn't for me. And then, but I'm lazy. So laziness took over. And he told me, if you make a video and these guys contact you, you can just send them a link and nobody has to see your channel or anything. Well, I thought, man, that's great. And it's easier. I'm more of a, I learn by doing and watching better than written instructions or, you know, I'm more of a monkey see, monkey do type dude. So anyway, I just made a three little short videos and posted them. And when guys would email me, I would just send them a link. And after a while, I would just get email after email after email. Hey, man, send me that link, send me that link. And my channel was actually private way over a year, man, before I ever had any public videos. And after a while, I was getting so many requests for the links that I just made it private or made it public, never released another video for months. And then one of the guys was asking me about a stock finish I'd done. And I thought, well, you know, I guess I could film doing the stock finish. And all I had was an iPad, man. I didn't have an external microphone. Didn't have a tripod, nothing to hold it with. Now, actually, my little dog Bella had a little stuffed monkey, and I would set the iPad on this monkey and set it up on a 6-foot step ladder, and that was my tripod. That's how I filmed. And anyway, I would do this, you know, do a stock finish, and the guys would like it. And then, you know, they'd ask me, well, how'd you do that blue in? You know, how'd you jewel that, you know, piece of chrome? How'd you do this? How'd you do that? My dad was an amateur gunsmith, so I just started making videos on how I did some of the little upgrade stuff, and it just kind of took off, man. And I was watching guys like Ted and Matt and Steve Shalley, and all these guys are buddies of mine, and just incredible shooters, incredible guys. And, you know, I thought, man, I want to be like them. I want to do air gun reviews. And so I started doing a few air gun videos, and some of them are still on YouTube still, but I did a few of them, and it's like, man, I mean, their videos are just so good. And then new guys like Rick at Shooter 1721, 68 Whiskey, the guy, Earlis, that has the Guana Hunter, Steve from Airgun Evolution. I mean, there's 100 more that are just doing it so much better than I was. And I was like, man, you know, I'm never going to be able to make the videos as good as these guys are. And, you know, like, and, I'd gotten sick, and while I was sick, I wasn't able to shoot. I had to have a lot of abdominal surgery, so I couldn't even lift a gun. And I was really blessed. I had a lot of rifles in my closet, and I was able to sell them and, you know, kind of help recoup the money that I was missing from being off work so much. And I had all these scopes, and I started watching how these guys were doing scope reviews, and I thought, I could do that shit better than that, you know? So I just, you know, made me a little homemade fixture in the back and started filming in my backyard, and it just kind of took off from there, man.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. I mean, and it's cool, too, that you were able to recognize that, you know, because I totally agree with you, like, you know, Matt's production on his videos, like, I don't think anyone's gonna do it better, and I'm pretty sure he has a background in like video production and filming and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but the dude, he just has it down. So like, I've felt the same way too with posting videos on YouTube. I'm like, man, you can't do that. But you're able to recognize somewhere where there weren't such good videos, you know, in the airgun industry, and capitalize on that, which I think that's a smart move, man. Good for you for doing that.
Yeah, and like I mean, I'm really blessed. Matter of fact, I talked to Matt by email earlier today. And Steve Shalley and I, we talk about once a month. Actually, if it wasn't for Steve, I was fixing to stop making videos. And just everything I did was wrong. I wasn't on Facebook, Instagram, any of the social media. I grew up in a time where I kind of missed the learning curve, and everything I did was wrong. And I really looked up to Steve, man, because his videos are like Matt's, you know, they're just, they're incredible, the amount of quality that he has in them. And I reached out to him, man, and he was nice enough to give me a call. And I mean, we literally sit and talk for 2 or 3 hours. And he was, I mean, he walked me from, you know, the day the dinosaurs died up till how to upload. I mean, he helped me out with so much. And, you know, and I've told him, and matter of fact, in public forums, you know, we were on stage together at Extreme Benchrest last year, and you know, who your favorite YouTuber is. And, you know, and I pointed out Steve right then, and he let guys know, man, if it wasn't for Steve, I was literally fixing to quit. I was enjoying it, but it was, it's frustrating to put in the work and the time and nobody's seeing your videos. You have an idea of what you want your video to look like, but it doesn't come out like that. And you can't figure out why, you know, and Steve walked me through a lot of it, man. The quality of my videos within, oh man, probably a month doubled. And then on down the line, man, guys like Dana from Mountain Sport Air Guns and Kurt Vaughn from Vaughn Precision. And these guys are really good with cameras, but you know, guys like Matt, you know, he's got, like I say, man, I think he was actually a producer and, you know, was a cameraman for some of these outdoor shows. So the stuff he uses is way over my head. And I was wanting to go to better audio and video equipment. And like I say, Kurt and Dana at Mountain Sport Air Guns. And if you guys haven't seen Dana's videos at Mountain Sport Air Guns, you need to, man. I mean, he's close to Matt as anybody's gonna get. I mean, he is good, but you know,
yeah, his videos are great.
Oh yeah, man, he's a great dude. But these guys were nice enough to take the time to help me, you know, figure out, you know, how to kind of get a starter level DSLR and microphones and different editing apps. You know, these guys were all way ahead of the curve, you know, for me. And it was just so nice, man. And a lot of guys don't realize it. Most of the, especially the air gun community, most all the guys that have air gun channels, we all talk on the phone, by email. When we get together in person, man, we all, you know, visit, and we're all trying to help each other, man. We all know the amount of time that goes into it, and we want to help each other make better videos. You know, we're all pulling for each other. It's not a competition, man. We really do all want to see each other get better. And to give you an idea of the kind of time that you put into this kind of stuff, Steve Shalley told me that on average, for every minute you see on film or on the video, he's got about 8 hours in it. And when he told me that, I thought, you know, whatever, you know, you're exaggerating. And now mine are up to about 3 to 4 hours per minute. And my production quality is nothing like Steve's is. You know, it just, if people are going to take the time to watch it, you want to make sure that, you know, that it's watchable. You know, you don't want to make something nobody's going to want to see. So, you know, it like I say, it's just kind of evolved from there. And the editing process, all of it, man, it's just a blast now, man. I just love it. You know, I really do, man. I just get the biggest kick out of doing this.
They have a part where you can skip the intro, or they just cut it down on the show because they know, like, people are watching this show for the episodes and not the intro. And same thing with YouTube. You know, people are watching it for what the video is about, not your intro. So yeah, it's cool to make a good intro, but you also have to keep that in mind that, you know, especially nowadays, people's attention spans are so short, so people are gonna lose interest pretty quickly. So that's definitely a good tip.
Like mine is 5 seconds long. Literally, it's 5.02 seconds. I know it's the exact same one all the time. It's off of one of the old Sinbad shows. And it's just a gong, and it shows one of these cyclops fighting a bunch of deals, and immediately I cut to the video. And I don't put, you know, I try not to ever put any more filler in there, because there's a lot of guys that want to make their videos longer and longer and longer. I'm just the opposite. You know, I can sit and talk to somebody, like talking to you right now and talking to the audience that you have. I could sit and talk with somebody for hours, but to actually sit down to watch videos, you know, I feel blessed if anybody, you know, thought enough to even click on my videos. I damn sure don't want to bore them to death, you know, with just a bunch of filler, you know, just to try to make the videos longer. You know, I hate that, man, because a lot of my videos, well, here's an example, man. I did a video for tracked, released it, I think last week, week before. When I started out, man, that thing was like 17 minutes long. And I mean, I thought, okay, this is this complete video at 17 minutes. I cut it all the way back down to under 9, you know, because I'm just constantly going back through it. Okay, I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't need that. And when I'm through, man, I'm just trying to, you know, I try to let the guys that are watching my video, here's what we're fixing to look at. Show it to all the features of it up close, show it how it performs, and then thank them. I appreciate you tuning in, you know, hang in there. I got more stuff coming, and let them go, man. You know, right. let them off the hook, man. Don't just sit there and just, you know, keep droning on and over and over and over. You know, that gets a little old to me.
Maybe it seems like counterintuitive, but like kind of your approach on the way you make the videos and edit them and that whole thing, I think it ropes people back in because they want to be like, but wait, I want to see more. So it's like, you know, I don't, you got a good tactic, obviously. I mean, your channel's been growing and, you know, it's cool to see that just from an outsider's perspective is watching a channel grow. Because I've seen your videos for quite a while now, pretty much ever since I got into air guns, you know, five or almost 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've watched you grow. So, Joe, can you tell us, I mean, if people haven't heard of you or seen your YouTube videos, then they won't quite get the channel name. So maybe you could give brand new listeners or people who haven't seen your channel kind of an idea of where it came from, if you'd like.
Oh, okay. Well, when I was, 17, I'm a pretty good sized dude. I'm like 6 foot tall. And even at that age, I was about 225. Now you can add about 100 pounds on that, but you know, I was 8 foot tall and bulletproof. I mean, absolutely the baddest thing walking the face of the earth. And one night I got pulled over by these two drunks. I thought it was a couple of buddies of mine and kind of in a vacant area. And they walked right up to me in the car. I was sitting in the vehicle. I know. And when they got right to me, I realized I didn't know who it was. And one of them hit me with a pipe across the side of the head. And I mean, ended up, you know, knocking out teeth, broken jaw, ribs, arm, leg, man, punctured kidneys, collapsed lung. I mean, you name it, man. I mean, they beat me down bad, but it did a lot of damage on the left side of my face. And I went through a lot of therapy. I missed a lot of my junior and senior year of high school. And I had a lot of therapy that I went through. And I was able to, you know, get back to semi-normal, kind of scarred up, but everything was fine. And then in 2011, I came down with something called Bell's palsy. And the guys that don't know what it is, it looks like you've had a stroke. One side of your face just droops. But what it is, it's more like a carpal tunnel. It's a pinched nerve. And unfortunately, that nerve runs right above your jawline, right above your ear. And when it becomes pinched, it'll either kill it or it can just kind of disable it and everything comes back normally. But for me, because of the prior damage, it cut it completely and the nerve didn't grow all the way back to my eye. So my eye, I have an eye patch. So I just kind of jokingly named the channel Cyclops Videos and I have to wear the eye patch. I actually have vision in my left eye, but it won't blink and it won't make its own tears. I mean, it moves around. But if you can imagine, you know, if somebody glued your eyelids open and you couldn't make tears in it anymore, I mean, it dries out, it would hurt all the time. So I have to put stuff in it. And I just wear the eye patch because it's my only backup. You know, right. I mean, if I'm out, like, I mean, just anything, like a bug flying at me, you know, somebody drops a bottle of hot, you know, going out to eat at a restaurant because this happened. And somebody picked up some hot sauce and, it, you know, part of it come off the chip and splatted. Well, it just went right in my eye, man. And I mean, burned like crazy, man. And so, like I say, I just have to wear it for protection. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just, when it first happened, man, I hated it. Oh, man, I hated the eye patch. I mean, I felt like I was walking around with a, you know, something that just, you know, hey, man, you know, here's a dude that's not right, you know, with that kind of sign over the top of it. But now it's how guys recognize me. It is weird. I'll go out somewhere and guys will walk up to me, man, you're the Cyclops, right? It's like, yeah, dude, you know, my name is Joe, but yeah, Cyclops, I get it, you know, yeah. But yeah, I just have fun with it, man. Cause you know, guys, you know, I don't know, man. If you can't make fun of it, man, you're going to sit around and, you know, get sad about it. And when I was going through therapy after I had Bell's palsy, I was in therapy for my face for about almost 4 months. And there was an older guy in there. He was probably, I don't know, he was in his 60s, which I'm coming up on fast, but he saw me and he could tell I was down about it. And he wore an eye patch. And he told me, he said, man, you seem like you're kind of disappointed about the eye patch. And I said, yeah, I really don't want to wear this thing. He told me, man, you got two choices. You can walk around, be a victim, or you can rock that eye patch. Mm-hmm. You know, and I said, rock it. And he said, tell the truth, man, chicks dig pirates. And I thought, you know what? This dude's right. Chicks do dig pirates. You know? So now I just got to proudly wear it, man. Like I say, for me, it's, you know, it's just like, you know, picking up my car keys or my wallet when I walk out the door. Here at home, as long as the fans aren't blowing or, you know, I'm inside, I'll wear it. I wouldn't wear it. Or a lot of times when I'm driving, I don't, because my peripheral vision is still pretty good in the left eye. Mm-hmm. My vision directly in front, the lens is all scarred up now where it won't, you know, won't close and won't, you know, get moisture in it. But I have good peripheral vision. So a lot of times, you know, if a car pulls up beside me, I could see it in my peripheral vision. But as soon as I step out of the car, man, or get ready to step out of the car, I put the eye patch on, you know. So anybody that ever sees me in public, that's all they ever see. Nobody ever sees me without it, you know. But, you know, if somebody comes to my home or, you know, something like that, you know, then they'll see me without it. And it's like, dude, I didn't know you had an eyeball. And it's like, you should have asked, man. You know, it's like, no, man, I'm just having to protect it, you know. But yeah, it was just like, say, you know, I just kind of ran with it, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, man, that's awesome too. I mean, just like that advice that, you know, guy gave you know, you can either be a victim or rock it. I think you have pretty much embodied what it means to rock something.
And, yeah,
I think that's really cool. I have a lot of respect for you for doing that. And I think a lot of our listeners too probably don't quite know the story behind it. So you're a badass, Joe. That's all I can say.
No, if I was a badass, I wouldn't have got the hell beat out of me way back then. But, you know, but now, man, like I say, and, you know, when guys ask me, man, does that gnaw at you? You know, that those guys, you know, beat you up and did all this. And it's like, man, you know, honestly, I never give it a thought. I really don't, man. You know, I just, a lot of guys carry around that kind of stuff with them, bitterness and anger and stuff. And it's like, you know, it's, you know, life's too short, man, to sit around and worry about that kind of stuff. Man, there's too many fun things to do. There's too many cool people out there that you know, to meet and spend time with. And you walk around bitter over an incident that happened, you know, 40 years ago. No thanks, man. You know, like I say, I never give it a thought, man. You know, I actually made a video about it, and guys will leave comments, man, I bet you wished 1,000 times these guys, you know, ended up getting theirs and stuff. And honestly, looking at it, looking back on it now, I'm thinking, you know, I mean, whatever happened, you know, just, you know, going about your life. You know, I'd hate to think that beat the hell out of some other kid, but, you know, I just don't dwell on it, man. I very rarely even think about it anymore unless somebody brings it up, you know.
Well, that's, man, Joe, you got a good attitude, man. I like that about you. And I think that that shows in your YouTube channels, because you said, you know, you don't know why people keep clicking. But I think it's because you got a great personality, a good outlook, and you're just a funny dude as well. So.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I just, yeah. You know, and I, here's something, man, your listeners might like. I put little Easter eggs in some of my videos. Three of my videos, there's a human skull in. There is, man. I bought a prop human skull, and one of them, it's in one of the, when I do my scope videos, there's a tracking test, and it's embedded in the dirt behind it, and it's very clearly visible. Not a single soul has seen it. I mean, or if they have, nobody's commented on it. I did a video here about 3 weeks ago, and I've been playing with like these after special effects, and it was really cloudy that day, and I had a UFO come over behind me. And dude, if you see, it's a Delta Striker video. It's a, like a 1-6, 1-8 LPVO type scope. But right towards the end of it, there's a UFO comes over, man. And I showed it. The first person I showed it to was my wife. And that was the first effect before I put any text or anything on it. And she had to watch it a couple of times as she picked it up. Well, once I put the text and stuff in, there's other stuff, you know, guys are reading this or they see the subscribe button and stuff. And I think it's about time to subscribe, but it's a UFO flight over. Not one soul has seen it or said anything about it. I've got a video where in the background, way back in the background, there's kind of a scary clown peeking out behind a tree. Not one person saw it. You know, it's like, dude, I'm putting little stuff in there. This last one that I did for Tract, I put a dancing rabbit at 100 yards in one of the tests. Everybody saw that. But, you know, I try to do little stuff, man, to make it fun, you know, because a lot of the some of the guys take the kind of substitute teacher. Okay, class. Today we're going to do this, and we're no, man. You got to hold my attention better than that. You know, I got, you know, I got the attention span of a coked out gnat. You know, I can't sit there and watch that, you know. So, but yeah, like I say, I just try to have fun with it. And I think part of it too is so many guys, they kind of have their stuff scripted. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I have a general idea of what I want to say about whatever it is I'm reviewing, but I just let it rip, you know, and, a lot of times that'll get me in hot water with some of the other companies and stuff where it's like, damn, dude, did you have to mention that? And it's like, hey, man, I noticed it. So I mentioned it, you know, and something else I do that's different, I think, compared to other guys that do product reviews or other guys, they watch other people's videos before mm-hmm. they do the review, you know, like Ted and Matt and them, they just came out with this Element series of scopes and they're really cool. But a lot of guys, I think, they watch to see what other people said about it, you know, and then they include that in their review. And I make a point never to do that because, for one thing, you know, it's kind of like a chick with a crooked ear. Once somebody points it out, you can't help but notice it, you know, but you may have not noticed it yourself. You know, so, yeah. You know, I just, like I say, man, I make a point to never look at anybody else's review. And then I just do my own, you know, and on down the line, I might look at it, you know, to see, especially if it's one of my buddies, like, you know, like Matt or Ted or Shane Keller from, you know, Utah Air Guns, if they're in a video talking about something, you know, I'll tune in to see what they thought about it later. But I make a point to never watch it first. I really do, because I caught myself doing that a couple of times when I first started, and I thought I was doing it to kind of see how they kind of had a natural flow to the video, but I realized it was biasing my opinion, you know? Right. So now I don't. And like I say, I watch all these guys' stuff, but like the Element scopes, I've got two more of those coming. And I know there's a bunch of videos out there, but I purposely haven't watched any of them because I want to kind of do my own thing. And then when I get through, I'll look at theirs and see if there's something. It's like, oh, man, I wish I'd have mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good, though, because, you know, for reasons you just mentioned, if someone points something out and then that's all you can look at during your review, you know, it's hard to stay on topic, hard to focus, and then have your own thoughts about, like, you know, I did like this or I did like that. And then, you know, also it's just if you see something that none of the other channels have seen, because you didn't watch any videos and you don't mention, you know, the same thing that they don't mention, you know, then your channel sticks out. So I think that's a good strategy. Seems like you got this YouTube thing down pretty well, Joe.
I hope so, man. It's a blast, man. For me, like right now, man, with the kind of with the Corona thing going on, you know, my wife and I, we're being really careful. And I have a mother that I take stuff down to look out for her. She's a widow on her own, not in the best of health. And, you know, Lord knows I've had my own health problems. So we're being really careful. And, you know, I'll go out to the range, do my filming and come in the editing thing. You know, I'll just be sitting around, you know, at home and, you know, watching the TV show and I'll just plug in my headset, you know, get out the laptop or the iPad, you know, and do all my editing and stuff. And it just gives me something to do. And because I'm, you know, here lately, I've had so much free time on my hands. You know, I try to, you know, I've been working on trying to work on my editing skills. And, and something else that's weird that, you know, guys would know, I watch a lot of guitar channels. Now, I don't play guitar. I have no interest in playing a guitar. I don't know anything about guitars, but something I discovered, a lot of the guitar channels, they have really cool transitions, the background music that they use, the intros that they use. And I started watching them because of the wood finishing when I was doing a lot of gun stocks, and I just kind of got hooked on it. So now I watch a lot of them and try to take some of the stuff that I saw these guys do and use it in the gun channel stuff, because a lot of the guys aren't, you know, it's real easy to fall into the trap of following somebody else's pattern of doing stuff, you know, and you get, you know, too comfortable in a particular pattern. And, but like I say, I try to mix my stuff up, you know, so I'll watch some of these other guys, see what they're doing. And it's like, oh man, that's a cool idea. I'll do that. You know? So, you know, like I say, man, I try to incorporate some new stuff, because I want my channel to stand out and my videos to stand out, but I also want them to be representative of me. I don't want to be YouTube Joe, and then you meet me in person and I'm not the same dude. You know, I'm the same, you know, ignorant fat ass, regardless of where you see me. You know, it doesn't matter if you run into me at the liquor store or if you see me walking out of the church, I'm the exact same dude. You know,
right on, man.
And like my wife says, you know, I'm Joe wherever I go.
That's good, man. And that's a really something I think everyone should aspire to, is just be consistent, you know, because a lot of times we do kind of put on like a facade in certain places.
Yeah.
Or like you mentioned, the church, you know, I don't want to look different at church, you know, than when I'm at home with my family or out with my friends or something like that. You know, I want to be the same guy. So,
yeah. And I mean, you know, you want to grow and you want to change. Like an example, talking about my YouTube channel, when I first started, I was still working. I worked at a factory for 35 years. I've retired now, but at the factory, man, I mean, people curse every other word. I mean, even girls that have, you know, they're raising young girls alone, they curse like crazy. So, you know, if all day long you're hearing it, you start talking like that. Well, now, after I've retired, I'm around people that are, I wouldn't necessarily say more well-spoken, but they don't curse like that. So I don't cuss like I used to, you know, and I've had guys tell me, hey man, are you trying to clean it up? It's like, no man, you know, it's just, I'm not around that every day so much, you know, so now I'm not. It's kind of like picking up an accent, you know, it's like, I'm not around that all day, every day now. So, you know, that's just not, you know, how I talk as much. I mean, I still do, you know, I mean, I'm sure during this broadcast, I probably, you know, curse several times because it's just part of my vocabulary, but it's not, you know, to most people that aren't around people that curse all day long like that, when they hear it, I mean, they just look at you and think, what's wrong with you? Because I've been out with some of these guys since, you know, before the COVID thing started, and I'll hear them and I'm thinking, you know, because we went out with some friends and I remember asking my wife, did I cuss like that? And she said, did you cuss like that? You cussed more than they did. And I thought, oh, wow. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, but, you know, you grow, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And that's a good thing to grow.
Yeah.
Joe, what is it that got you into air guns originally?
Honestly, man, I shot air guns when I was a kid and kind of got away from it when I started getting into big guns, I guess you'd say. And honestly, what got me back interested in it was when people started buying up ARs, and our local range is a private range and you pay an annual fee, but you can also go out there and pay $10 a day and shoot all day. Well, it started bringing out all these weekend Rambos. You know, I'm out there with a 222, you know, trying to, you know, shoot precision, or even a 22, or just go out there with the guys, you know, and up rolls a, you know, Suburban, four guys get out, you know, with $30,000 worth of AR stuff. They go out there at 25 yards and as fast as they can pull the trigger, you know, and then, you know, they want to go down and pull targets every 5 minutes. You know, by the time you fire twice, they're already wanting to pull targets again. And it just, you know, I got real frustrated with going out there, but I wanted to keep shooting, and I live in the suburbs, so I was looking at an alternative, and I was looking at maybe getting a suppressor for one of my 22s, and I thought, nah, you know, I just didn't feel safe shooting a 22, regardless what the backstop was, you know, in my yard. And I have a privacy fence and a solid backstop that I shoot into, but I still just, you know, the safety factor started, you know, gave me the wheelies a little bit. So I just started looking into air guns, and I bought some, a couple of the cheap Walmart guns and got frustrated with them. And I got some PCPs, man, and they were just, oh man, they were just in another world accuracy wise and power wise. But the only thing about the PCPs, as I mentioned earlier, when I got sick and had to have all that surgery, was picking up the tanks and all the gear. And, you know, that became frustrating. And I started getting into the vintage air guns. They're really easy to cock. They're very, very underpowered. I mean, they shoot about 550 to 600 feet per second with a lightweight 177. You know, they're only made to shoot 10 meters. And and even when I was having all these surgeries and stuff, man, it couldn't lift anything more than 10 pounds. I could still cock those guns, you know, and still shoot them. And as a matter of fact, man, I've got quite a few videos of me shooting other air guns. There's an HW80, a 97. And guys don't realize it because through editing, I was able to edit it out. But my wife was actually having to cock those guns for me. Because of all the surgeries, man, I couldn't cock it. You know, I was afraid I would tear all the stitching loose. So, you know, I would shoot and, you know, then she would cock it, you know, and I would edit all that out, you know, but she was actually having to cock the guns for me, you know, and there's a couple other videos where I'm leaned up against a fence. And I mean, I would have to go out there on crutches. She would kind of get me propped up against the fence, get the camera lined up. I'd do my little part of the video, you know. Then she turned the tech camera off and come get me. Man, she's a good woman and she helped a bunch. But I don't know, man. And then once I went to my first big air gun event, I guess, I don't know if you'd call one of the air gun shows, which are just a blast. If you guys haven't been to one, you need to go. But the first time I went to EBR, I was hooked. I mean, 100% hooked, man. You go and you meet Matt in person. You meet Ted in person, Steve Shalley, man. Giles is just a blast to hang out with. You know, you know, you see all these guys on the AOA videos, you know, and you go meet Jared and meet these guys, man. And you realize, man, they're just a bunch of dudes just like you. You know, there's nothing special about them. They just, you know, film part of their activities in front of a camera and then put it on YouTube. But just meeting all these guys and, you know, and then there's 100 other guys that people don't know, you know, because they're not on YouTube, you know, and meeting so many cool people. And now I've got like a little group of us that we all travel together and go to these events. And, you know, we'll go rent one of these big Airbnbs and, man, just have a blast with that. But the air gun thing is just something that we all share. And I can't picture not having air guns in, you know, around me now. I keep a Finework Val 300 literally right by the back door. And I have a bench set up on my back deck. And I'll just walk out there in the afternoon sometimes and just, you know, it's effortless. It's fun. It's quiet. It doesn't disturb the neighbors, you know, and you could still get in precision shooting, man, which is fun, you know, and it's really addictive, man. And for me to go shoot even my 22, or like my 223, which I shoot a lot. If you guys watch my videos, they'll see that gun a lot, but, even to go shoot it, you know, it's 20 minutes to the range. I got to load my gear in my vehicle, take it out there, unload everything, shoot for a while, and hopefully it won't be too crowded, you know, and there won't be a bunch of, you know, being around a bunch of guys with a bunch of 16-inch barreled ARs with brakes on them, yeah, they're a blast. But it's not any fun when there's five guys on each side of you and they're just waylaying with those things. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of hearing protection. After a while, it's like, you know, shit, I can't stand this. I'm gone. You know, and like I say, for me personally, man, I like to have some time to myself and just grabbing one of my air guns, man, and just sitting out back and, you know, have a cold beverage to drink. Oh, man, usually it's, you know, comes from the Rocky Mountains and just sit out there with my air gun, man, and just have a blast, man. It's just relaxing and it's soothing. It's just a really interesting sport to me.
Yeah, it really is cool. And for, you know, a lot of the reasons you just mentioned, you know, they're so quiet. They don't typically disturb the neighbors. Depending on your surroundings or how much of a jerk your neighbor is.
But right.
They're super fun. They're super quiet. And the safety factor, I think, is huge for a lot of people, you know, because I live in a city and I have a very small backyard. So I can't go out in the back and just, you know, shoot a 22. So,
right.
But the fact that I can have an air rifle with a moderator on it that's extremely quiet and still shoot, you know, in my 15 yards, that's huge, being able to have that outlet as well.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
man.
Just having to go to the range every time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Like I say, I probably shoot more rounds in my backyard easily than I'll shoot at the range if I'm out there all day long because, you know, like I say, it's so convenient, it's so quiet. My neighbor on one side of me, we actually knew each other. We've known each other for years. We used to work together. And occasionally he'll come out, you know, and talk to me while I'm out there shooting. And he's not a shooter himself, but we're buddies. So he'll come lean over the fence and watch me shoot a little bit or talk to me. But the neighbors on the other side of me, you know, we don't really have a relationship. They're just somebody that lives next door. But I don't want to be the asshole that's out there shooting on firecrackers or out there shooting a gun all the time and nobody can rest. You know, for me, the quietness factor, the safety, and honestly, the precision, man. You know, guys that, you know, I know the guys that listen, that are listening to the podcast here, if you're into air guns, you realize just how accurate these things are. But most people, they have no idea the kind of accuracy you can achieve with these things. You know, and I mean, a good example, the gun that I shoot is a 10-meter rifle. And in the back of my yard, I've got an old archery target that's exactly 38 yards. And inside that old archery target is filled with old plastic and stuff like this. Bumblebees have built a nest that's huge. But I'll go out there and shoot. I mean, I couldn't move it if I wanted to. You get stung to death. But I'll go out there now. And I'll shoot and I'll put my target beside that, or I'll reach up and shoot that thing. And those bumblebees will start coming out one or two at a time. And they'll come out and there's a burlap cover on it. And they'll walk across that burlap. Well, you know, from 38 yards, that's a good little target. And I'll just sit out there and shoot bumblebees. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, I'll sit out there for an hour shooting bumblebees and I'll have to stop myself because it's like, I don't want to kill off my breeding stock. You know,
right.
But it's just a blast, man. Or I'll go out and take a paper plate and just pour some sugar water, honey, spill some Coke on it and just nail it up. And it starts drawing flies and just sit there and shooting at flies. You know, and as silly as that sounds to other people, guys that are into air gun, get it. You know, it's some precision you can do. You know, you don't have to worry about, I've killed deer and I've killed hogs with air guns. But I've also lost deer and hogs with air guns. So, they weren't big bores. They were 25 and 30 caliber. And with a well-placed shot, yeah, you can get them. You know, guys know that. But if it's not perfect, you'll lose it. And for me, I don't like crippling animals like that. So I'd rather have more than enough guns. So, you know, I'll squirrel hunt, you know, bird, shoot a lot of birds and stuff like that. But my wife likes having the songbirds out there in the backyard. So like I say, I'll just sit out there and shoot those bumblebees or go out there and put up a plate and shoot flies and stuff. Just killing time, man. Just something to do, you know, and get some fresh air, man. It's just a blast, dude. There's nothing about air guns that I don't enjoy. Literally nothing about it.
Yeah, and that's that accuracy too, like you're talking about. I mean, I wonder what the equivalent would be, you know, of shooting a fly with like a firearm, like a 22.
Yeah.
Like what yardage that is. Cause, you know, 38 yards, that doesn't sound like super far, but you're shooting a 17 caliber pellet and you're hitting a fly. Like that's, even if it's a big old horse fly, that still is, that's incredibly accurate. So,
oh, yeah.
In the lower power, too, you know, they're not shooting, you're probably not shooting 1,200 feet per second, you know, with some.
No, they're shooting under 600 feet per second. You know, I mean, it literally is about the equivalent of guys used to have these pump up Benjamin. I know when I grew up, we had these pump up Benjamin rifles and they shoot about that velocity. And that's the velocity these things are shooting at, you know, but it's like taking a pump up Benjamin, pumping it three times. I mean, these things aren't shooting hard, you know, but it's enough to kill a bug, you know, and like I say, just go out and have fun with. But accuracy wise, If the wind's not blowing, man, and it's not me. Don't get me wrong. I'm a fairly good shot, but I'm not a really accomplished shot. Not like some of the guys we've been talking about. But you know, with the rifle that I shoot, these FWBs and the Dianas, the recoilless rifles. If you take one of those at 50 yards, and I shoot it at RMAC and EBR and stuff, and if the wind's not blowing and the other guys are shooting HW97s and TX200s, and all those are great rifles and really accurate. But if the wind dies down, they don't have a chance. I mean, they do not have a chance. It's like taking a slug shotgun and shooting it against a really accurate Creedmoor. You know, you don't have a chance. But okay. You know, with the when you add in the wind, you know, the faster guns, you know, take over, you know, because the velocity, you know, where they're at 50 yards, they can shoot in perfect conditions. They may can hit something, say the size of a plum or maybe a small apple. You know, with my gun at 50 yards in windless conditions, you know, you can hit a dime. Right. You know, but the wind's always blowing. And because it blows so low, you know, because it's going so slow in the wind, a lot of times I'm having to hold off a foot, you know, because it's drifting so far. But, you know, but I still love it, man. And that just adds to the fun to me.
Distance, pretty much any variable that's thrown into it, that's part of the fun of shooting in general.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially with air guns, man. You know, if you change one thing, you changed everything. Any change that you do changes your point of impact, how it groups and everything else. And that's part of the intrigue too. I used to reload, and reloading is a lot of fun. You can get way down the rabbit hole with reloading as far as trying to get precision, but with air guns, it's the same way, like 177. I mean, there's 100 different types of pellets out there, all different weights and brands. And you can just sit out there and shoot till you go blind, you know, trying to find the right pellet. And then you mess around later, like in the Springer rifles, that's you change a spring, or, you know, you change something, you put a moderator on it, or you change a weight on it somewhere. Now you start all over, you know, you changed one thing. So now everything's different, you know, and that, like I say, that's part, it's part of the frustration, but it's also part of the fun.
Man. Well, Joe, where do you see the future of air guns going? Do you think it's going to be,
honestly, I think eventually it'll all be slugs. I think that the traditional Diablo-type pellet, I think eventually it'll just go away. The slugs are just so much more aerodynamic. They're so much more accurate. And right now they're more expensive, but as production increases, they're going to get cheaper. You know, as they're more available and the cost goes down, there's no downside. There really isn't. I mean, you can take, like we were saying about the 10-meter rifles compared to a stronger shooting gun, you could take somebody like Matt, who's just an incredible shot. Take Matt to the range at 100 yards, make him shoot pellets, real pellets, and take some hack like me and give him the equivalent rifle and let me shoot slugs. Matt's handicapped. I mean, you hamstrung him. Immediately. Right. Now, I'm not saying I could beat him. I mean, that guy can still shoot, you know, lights around me. And Ted and all these other guys can too. But, you know, you really handicapped him by doing that. That's the reason, you know, they won't let you shoot slugs against pellets. You know, so I think eventually it'll all be slugs. There may still be some pellets for, you know, cheap stuff like big box stores, you know, Walmart, stuff like that. They may still use pellets there because they are going to be cheaper for a lot longer. But for one thing, it's just there's less raw material in them. But, you know, I think eventually it's going to be slugs. And I think the standard caliber within the next few years, and it's already, you know, maybe there now, will be like the 25. You know, I think the 22 is going to be kind of a small caliber. The 25 is going to be the more standardized caliber. And then the 30 will be a little bigger. And like right now, 30 caliber is considered a pretty good size, you know, air rifle.
Right.
But even though it's a 30 caliber, unless it's had a lot of stuff done to it, is it safe to shoot a pig with a small piglet? Yeah, maybe. Is it powerful enough to kill a deer, a small deer, you know, like in South Texas where full grown buck weighs 100 pounds on the hoof? Yeah, if you shoot him in the head or something, but I wouldn't want to put it behind his shoulder.
Right.
You know, I think they're really marginal for big gun hunting. But for me, and this is just my personal view, the big bore rifles don't interest me in any way. They just don't, man. And it's not one of these. A lot of guys, you know, beat their chest, man. We need to be careful about this. You know, the ATF is going to come after our air guns eventually and stuff. And it's like, dude, I know guys in law enforcement. They look at an air rifle. I mean, you might as well have a straw shooting a dirt, you know, a piece of paper out of it. Man, I don't pay attention to that. They're not the least bit interested in air guns. And, you know, for right now, and now they're starting, now that they're coming out with the semi-autos and a few more full autos and stuff, if they ever figure out a way to get one powerful enough that's really dangerous and I hold a lot of shots, yeah, maybe they'll step in then. But for right now, you know, it's a novelty. I mean, an Air Force, you know, is a killer rifle, one of the big bore Air Forces, but you get two shots out of it, you know, and when it goes off, it sounds like a freaking 30-06. Me personally, if it's going to sound like a 30-06, I'll throw a 30-06 out there and I'll put something down. You know, it won't be a maybe I got him or the shot's got to be perfect or something like that. You know, I've got my dad's old 30-06. It's well over 100 years old. You know, I can take any round, put it through a deer's shoulders at 100 yards. That deer's going into the dirt. I mean, right then, not later, we'll go find him. I put it through his shoulders. He's going straight down. I don't care what the air rifle is. When you pull the trigger, man, you didn't kill him till you go get him. You know, they're even at their best, even at their most dangerous and powerful, they're still no better than a 30-30. And I have no idea how many hundreds of thousands of deer all over Texas that have been lost because the 30-30 didn't expand. You know, you just drilled a hole through him. Like I say, for me, the noise factor, it's not the power part of it. It's the noise. You know, the noise factor of the big bores for me, it just turns me off. You know, and there's other guys. I've got a buddy, Eric Henderson, that his channel's Outdoor Adventures. And I mean, he hunts all over the country with air guns. And I mean, it's really successful. But like I say, that just don't interest me, man. That, you know, it doesn't trip my trigger. It's just like to a lot of guys, they only want the most accurate PCPs. They could care less about the guns that I'm interested in. You know, there's a little bit for everybody.
There's the niches in there for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But that's an interesting point. It's good to hear something different, because I feel like sometimes people just say like, oh yeah, anything that is air gun news is good news and I want to talk it up.
Yeah.
But it's good to hear a different opinion, you know, on big bores. Especially we've had on the podcast a lot of guys who hunt with big bores.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm interested in it for sure. I think more so than it just being a big bore is just hunting. I think that's primarily the interest.
Yeah.
More than, you know, being an Umarex hammer or, you know, an Air Force Texan or whatever. But, you know, the noise thing is huge for me. That's why all the air guns I've bought so far, PCP wise, have been 25 or smaller in caliber. So,
right. And I'll tell you something else, man, that guys that may not know this. And if any of you guys are listening and you're thinking about getting a powerful PCP, like one of the Impacts or Day-States or any of the modern PCPs, hell, even a Marauder, if you get a 25 caliber, yeah, Donnie FL, and I know Donnie, man, and he makes incredible good stuff. Donnie can put you a moderator on it, man, that'll make it sound like a whisper. But you got to stop that pellet. It's when it stops, man, that's what makes most of the noise. I can go out with my 177s. Of course, they're Springers. And so there's a lot of, you know, the gun noise that you hear. And the impact is so low, it sounds about the same. But I can take my old 25 Cricket that I had that Donnie had made me a moderator and, you know, a huge oversized shroud for it and everything else. And, it you know, when it went off, it literally just went click. But when that pellet hit, you know, it sounded like he slapped a, you know, 55-gallon drum with a boat paddle. I mean, it's loud, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys don't factor that in, you know. And, well, I've got this silent pellet trap, not with a 25 caliber, you know, that's humming out there at about 75 foot-pounds. No, you don't have a trap that'll stop that silent.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that is a good point, too. Yeah, because that was one of the things that I was like, okay, I got to have a quiet rifle shrouded, get a moderator on there, and then I should be good to go. And then I start shooting it, and I'm like, oh, man, that pellet is smacking the target. Even though I put stuff up in front of it, it's still hitting that piece of wood really hard and making a loud-ass noise. So I had to reconsider my pellet trap configuration after that. So,
oh, yeah.
Again, a very good point to bring up with keeping them quiet.
Yeah. Well, like mine, it's too, my wife, when our pillows start getting where they're not fluffy and pretty and pristine anymore, she's still with them, you know? So I love that about her, but you know, it's like, you know, tired of buying pillows. So that's what I'd normally shoot into, man, seriously, is a cardboard box. It's something I can't remember what came in it, but it's a thick cardboard box. And I've got four pillows wedged in there. And by I'll set the pillow part of the target up in front of something else. And you'd be surprised, man, the pellets at that thing will stop. And I just got it in a cardboard box and I just taped the hell out of it. And after you shoot mm-hmm. it a little bit, man, have some paper up, you're not busting new cardboard and tape. And the pillows itself, they don't come out, you know, the fabric around them. And I'll sit out there and shoot that box of pillows. And man, if you shoot, you know, set a like a standard type target that you're used to shooting where it's not tearing new cardboard, man, after a while, it's virtually silent. But, you know, you throw right. a 30 caliber up and hit it, you're going to blow right through it.
Yeah, you
know,
yeah, for sure.
You know, it takes a lot more stopping power, man, for the, like I say, man, you know, those 30 calibers, man, and some of the hot 22s that are shooting, you know, 60 foot pounds and stuff like that, you know, a lot of the, even the like the little plastic air gun spinners and stuff like they sell at Walmart that are pretty thick plastic, you know, it'll blow a hole right through them, man. You know, yeah. those things are powerful, man. And like I say, for me in my backyard, they're more power than I'm comfortable with, you know, shooting because, you know, like I say, I have a privacy fence and stuff like that. And behind me is just a big industrial building and there's never anybody mm-hmm. outside, but I still don't want to unleash one of those. You know, I feel like right. I'm out there shooting a 20. I always treat it like I'm shooting a 22 that doesn't make noise. And, you know, so I try to treat it with that level of respect. You know, I don't want to accidentally hit something or, God forbid, you know, hit somebody's animal or hit somebody. You know, so like I say, you know, for me, you know, safety is a big deal. And the lower powered stuff, I feel safer. Like my 30 caliber, I take it to the range. Or I take right. it out to my buddy's house that lives out in the country. He has a range beside his house and there's nobody else around. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about it. But a 30 caliber in my backyard, where I live in the suburbs, no, man, it's not practical. You know, even with a good moderator, you can only get those things so quiet. And the impact, you've got to stop that thing, you know, and the impact's going to be louder than the gun, you know. So for me, it's not worth it.
I didn't really think of that when I first bought it. I just thought, oh, this which gun's quietest? I'm looking at the sound meter tests and, oh, if I get a moderator, then it's going to be this much more quiet. And then, you know, even an impact while you're, you know, doing pest control or hunting with it, like that animal makes a loud noise too. I've made shots on rabbits or squirrels or birds and it's like, just makes this loud pop noise. So,
oh yeah,
I guess you can't really, unless you're building a pellet trap specifically meant to be silent, you can't really get around some loud crack or popping noise factor when you're shooting a higher powered, typically PCP, you know, when you're out hunting or shooting animals or whatever it might be. So there is that noise factor regardless.
Oh yeah, man, without a doubt. Like I say, because man, I've shot sparrows. I mean, the little bitty ones, the little bitty mm-hmm. bitty sparrows, and shot them with 22 calibers. And for whatever reason, they turned right, or I caught the wing right as it went in, or whatever. And you shoot, you know, 10 of them, and they just go plunk, plunk, plunk. But every once in a while, you'll shoot one. It's like, man, did that thing have a firecracker in it, or what? I mean, it just exploded. You know, and it's mm-hmm. like, man, what was that sparrow eating? You know, it's that thing eating plastic explosives, because when it went off, man, it went boom, you know. And like I say, man, the noise factor for me, man, was that was a big part of, you know, the air gun. And for me, it still is. But, mm-hmm. you know, but I'd like I say, man, I've shot the big boars, man. They're a hoot. they really are, man, they're a blast, but I don't get to do as much hunting as I would like to. And when it, here in the part of the state that I live in, man, you know, you could literally hunt all year long and never see a deer. I mean, that's no exaggeration. You know, you can hunt hard all year long and never see a deer. We don't have a lot of deer in this part of the state. And what we do have is in certain pockets. You know, this is timber company, oil country. So there is no reason. The landowners don't want deer. You know, they want trees growing. They want the oil rigs out there pumping. You know, they're not interested in having deer. And when they do have a garden, they don't want them around. So, you know, like I say, you don't get the, as many chances. And because of it, when I do see one, I want to, you know, I want everything in my favor, you know. Right. So now hogs, they're everywhere. You know, you can get, you can kill 20 hogs any night you want to. You know, there's hogs everywhere in this part of the state. But, you know, a lot of guys don't, you know, they don't realize, and the guys that shoot and wound these things on video, of course, they don't put that on video. You know, you get run off of YouTube and everywhere else, but the tree huggers would just come from everywhere. But those hogs take a lot of killing, man. You know, the, some of the, some, you know, they get up above about 125 pounds. You hit one in the shoulder, man. You know, you hit something. I mean, you have to think about it like a 2x4. You know, you're trying to punch through that to get to those vitals, man. Them things are tough.
I mean, I haven't hunted them, but I've seen plenty of footage and videos and just that kind of, I mean, animals in general are just a lot tougher.
Oh yeah, man.
Than humans.
Oh, hell yeah, man. You know, I've seen, you know, most of the guys that you know, were listening have probably shot a squirrel with an air rifle. And I mean, a squirrel can take a lot of hits sometimes, you know, before they go down, you know, nothing wants to get, just roll over and give up their life. You know, they'll fight you, you know?
Yeah.
And that's part of the fun of air gunning too, is it'll teach you proper shot placement. You know, it'll make you, you know, just the fact that the weapon itself will force you to be more precise, will force you to take a more calculated shot. And it'll also teach your limitations. You know, where with a 22, you see a rabbit out there at 175 yards, you may just let it fly with a 22. With an air rifle, you see that same rabbit and you may think, I'm, you know, if I do hit him, I'm probably just going to wound him. I'll let it go. Now I know guys are killing them that far. And, but they didn't just start off in air guns killing them that far. You know, these guys, you know, they're using range finders, you know, doping the wind and everything else, you know, but.
Yeah. Making those long range shots. I think that's another thing that people who are interested in getting into the sport, it's not just like if you buy an impact and you put a slug liner in it that you're going to be able to make these 200 yard shots on, you know, pigeons and stuff like that. Like, you got to know you're shooting.
Oh yeah, man. What's those guys at 68 Whiskey, man? Keith and Norm. I mean, they've shot numerous animals on camera at over 300 yards, you know, completing shots at over 300 yards, man. Dane at Mountain Sport Air Guns, man. Claudio at, whatever it is, Polanio air guns or whatever it is down in South of in Chile, man, these guys regularly shoot over 100 yards, but you know, these guys all, they practice all the time, man. They're constantly, you know, checking their scopes. They have, you know, stickers on them to show the exact yards. They're using range finders, you know, they're checking the wind, man. You know, these guys aren't just out there, you know, just firing off in that direction, hoping for the best. You know, these guys are, you know, they really got it down to a science, and they're good. You know, they practice, man. You get good at anything if you practice.
Yeah, they really are great shots. I mean, I think that's another thing. People, they put too much faith in the gun.
Yeah.
And they think, you know, like I said, oh, if I just buy this FX Impact and have this company tune it, then I'll be able to hit anything. I'll be able to make those Air Hunter shots or Ted Beer shots.
Right.
You know, any of those top tier guys, when really it's like, no, man, those guys are damn good at what they do.
Oh yeah.
They're good because of how much time they put into it and how many mistakes they probably made doing it.
Oh yeah, man. You know, and Ted will tell you, man, you know, I've missed probably more than anybody in the world. You know, he's really cool to hang around with, man. And he's really humble. You know, I mean, he's accomplished. But he realizes, man, the only reason I'm accomplished is I put in the time, but you know, trigger time, you know. But yeah, these guys, because occasionally, man, there's a guy that has a channel, I'd rather not mention his channel name, but you know, he preached a lot of times on his channel. It's like, man, if I had the gun that they had and had these sponsors behind me, I'd go up there and I'd whoop their butts. No, dude, you wouldn't. You know, you may think you would. You really wouldn't. You know, I mean, there's just no way, man. You're not going to beat these guys. It'd be like, you know, me to say, man, if I had the revolvers that, you know, Jerry Mitchell's got, I'd just go tear his. No, you're not. You're not going to beat that guy. You know?
Yeah, it's completely irrational to think that way.
Yeah, man. You know, I'm 6 foot tall, man. Even, you know, when I was in my 20s and the healthiest, man, I'm not going to go out there and start for a Major League Baseball team. And these guys are the best of the best, man. You know, they're on TV for a reason. You know, yeah. When you see these guys in the winner's circle, man, they didn't go to the winner's circle because FX gave them a gun or Daystate gave them this or, you know, Accutech gave them a bipod. Man, they're there because they beat everybody's butt. You know,
yeah, man, they worked for right. it. And if you're that good, if you can whoop their ass, then you would be doing that.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, last year at EBR, I saw Ted when he first got there and I asked him, man, you ready? And he said, no, man, I don't have a chance. You know, the year before he won, or maybe it was mm-hmm. 2 years before, but he told me, man, you know, I went through, you know, I shot literally thousands and thousands and thousands of pellets. I mean, he was just shooting a ton of pellets every day practicing for months before it started. So when he got there, man, he was a fine-tuned machine. But he knows right. in order to win at that level, you have to be practicing. You have to be shooting like that. You can't just go out there and it's like, well, maybe today's, you know, my day, like you're scratching a lottery ticket. No, no, no. You're not going to beat those guys like that. You know, they scratch lottery tickets every day. They're out there practicing every single day, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean, and they're refined, man, you know, and they're good, but
they keep getting better.
Oh yeah, man. I would like to tell the guys, man, when you're on YouTube or any of the other social platforms, man, it'll recommend the same guys over and over. So, you know, if you're interested in, say, an Impact that's come up, you know, a couple of times, that I have one, you have one. So if you're interested in an Impact or a Ruger Brake Barrel or whatever it is, enter what you're going to enter in search and go down and give some of the channels you haven't looked at a look. You know, some of the best channels out there, man, some of my favorites, Dana at Mountain Sport Air Guns, man, Steve at Air Gun Evolution, Earlis at Around the Iguana Hunter, man. These guys have incredible freaking channels, but you know, guys aren't seeing them. They're not getting the traction I feel like they should be getting, man. You know, like Rick, it's Shooter 1720, where Rick does some incredible trick shots, but you know,
unbelievable.
Yeah, but he's good, man. He's a great dude too, but you know, he's promoted on a lot of different platforms. You know, mm-hmm. and he has some of the factories, which he deserves to be, you know, where he's at. But he has some of the factories help promoting, you know, and some of the retailers are promoting him, you know. So that's great. And he deserves every bit of it. But there's a lot of guys out there, man, that got some really cool information, some great channels and stuff like that that aren't getting promoted. I'm blessed to be where I'm at. Even if I never get mm-hmm. any larger, you know, this is way bigger than I ever thought my channel would be. And, you right. know, give some other guys a look, man. They're really worth it, man.
Yeah, that's a good advice. So just scroll down a little bit lower on the results page and just click through the videos.
Yeah, don't just click on the top three, man. Scroll down. There's some guys down there that, you know, their videos didn't trend as well, but they're just as useful.
Well, that's a good tip. Well, Joe, man, this was an awesome episode. I think everyone's going to love this. Was there anything else you wanted to leave people with? I know you mentioned you got a few reviews coming up. You're going to be reviewing the Impact, and then you got some Element scopes coming up as well for a review on your channel.
Yeah. Now I've got a pretty steady stream of scopes coming through here. Like I say, I have some air guns. I've got some one thing, man, that's really freaking cool. This has nothing to do with my channel, but I'm still going to do a video on it. A buddy of mine, I swapped him a scope for this cooler. It's called an Icy Breeze. I've never heard of this freaking thing. But anyway, you put beer and ice and water in it, and it's got like a duct. It looks like a vent off of an air conditioner on the car, and it blows cold mm-hmm. air, man. Anyway, I saw him out the range. He had this thing, and I thought that is the coolest thing in the world, man. Because I mean, this time of year in Texas, man, there's no fun at the range. You know, it's 90, right, 95 right. degrees, 90% humidity. This thing's blowing cold air. But anyway, I told him, I said, hey, man, I'm going to do a video on that, let other guys know about it, because I've never heard of it. And I saw it, and I thought, that is so freaking cool, you know. But like I say, I'm going to try to mix in a couple of other things if I find something that's just really cool that I think guys would enjoy. But this thing here, man, who doesn't like, you know, cold beer and a cold breeze when it's hot outside?
Yeah, all in one package.
It's a trip, man. It's a trip. Like I say, I hope you guys will check out the video, man. And tell you, I just wanted to let the guys know, man, I know that you're going to be crossing over to other social platforms and YouTube and everything else. And, man, I see nothing but good things for you, man. I really do.
Wow. Well, that means a lot, Joe. I really appreciate that, man.
Oh, yeah, no problem, man. Man, thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, man. We'll have to do it again. We'll catch up sometime. Once life gets back to normal, we'll have to meet up at one of the shooting competitions and do a live in-person episode.
Oh, that sounds great. And to the guys that are listening, man, I appreciate y'all listening to me. And if you meet these guys, if it's me or anybody else that you've seen on YouTube in person, man, go up, you know, talk to them. You know, shake their hand. I mean, when we can go back to shaking hands and stuff, because they're just regular guys, man. They're just regular guys. They've just got time on their hands and a video camera. That's the only difference.
Amen. Well, Joe, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you taking your time out of your day and coming on here to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, man.